America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. Thanks so much for listening. You may have heard the word Bitcoin being bandied about for the last few years. They were invented back in 2009 as a kind of virtual currency that first were floating around between people online and now are actually being accepted by some businesses, not just online companies like Overstock.com and Zynga, but the Sacramento Kings basketball team accepts Bitcoin. Richard Branson announced in November that Virgin Galactic is going to allow payments in Bitcoins. This week, two casinos in Las Vegas said they would start accepting Bitcoins. Not for gambling, but if you wanted to go to their steakhouse or pay off your hotel room bill, they would take Bitcoin. Well, what exactly is Bitcoin and how does it work? Here to help me understand this, and you too, is Jerry Brito, who's a senior research fellow at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University and director of its technology policy program. Jerry, welcome to America Weekend.
Thanks for having me.
Are you a Bitcoin owner?
I am. I have, six or seven Bitcoins.
Okay. How do you get them?
Well, probably most consumers are going to want to just go to a wallet service, something like Coinbase.com, which is probably like the leading wallet service. And you just hook up your bank account the way you would to PayPal, and you transfer over some money, and they convert it to Bitcoin, and now you have Bitcoin.
What's the value?
One Bitcoin right now is at about close to $900. But you don't have to buy one whole Bitcoin. You can buy, a dollar's worth of Bitcoin.
Okay, and is the value changing? Because I think I remember when they first came out, weren't they worth like 10 or 15 bucks a piece?
Yeah, well, when they were first, when it was first launched in January 2009, they were worth pennies. And now, as I say, it's gone up to as far as over $1,000. So basically, it floats against the dollar the same way that any other currency does, right? So if you go to Europe and you need to buy euros, the value between the euro and the dollar changes. The value between the dollar and the yen changes. So the same thing happens with Bitcoin.
Yeah, but I've never heard of the euro being worth 900 times more valuable than it was when it was first introduced, or if it was just pennies a time, we're talking 90,000 times more valuable.
Yeah, but when the euro was first introduced, it automatically had a user base of, a couple hundred million people. Whereas Bitcoin, when it was first introduced, it had a user of one, so that's why it was worth pennies. But as a network of people who, would accept Bitcoin or would want to have Bitcoin grew, the value of Bitcoin grows. That's why there's that volatility. Bitcoin is a very thinly traded market. It's still very, very new, very nascent technology. And so because there's much liquidity in the market, it's pretty volatile. But that, as the number of people who use it grows, that should calm down. But one thing I think people focus on so much about Bitcoin is, they start to think about it immediately as a currency, because it is. It's a digital currency. But really, that's not the best way to think about Bitcoin. The better way to think about Bitcoin is as a payment system. It is like a replacement or an alternative to Visa, MasterCard, or PayPal. That's really, the main application of Bitcoin that we're seeing today.
Except when you use Visa, MasterCard, or a debit card, or PayPal, you actually have dollars that are going to be transferred directly out of your bank account, and you know how much something is worth and how many dollars that's going to be. You don't have to worry about some fluctuating value and some conversion rate.
That's true. Yeah.
So why do we need Bitcoin?
Well, it's cheaper and faster than Visa, PayPal, and MasterCard. And I think that's why a lot of folks are attracted to it. So the thing about Visa, PayPal, and MasterCard is that they're centralized payment systems where, for you and I to transact online, we have to have a third party between us. And that third party takes a cut of the transaction. Right. So when you send money using PayPal, the merchant probably pays 3 to 4 or 5% of the transaction to PayPal.
Yep.
Same thing goes for Visa.
Yep.
With Bitcoin, there is no intermediary between us. We're literally exchanging money the same way we would cash. When I give you cash, I give you $100 bill. You now have it. I don't. We can verify that transaction happened by just looking at our hands and you have the money. I don't.
Right.
And there's no third party between us. So with Bitcoin, it's much more like cash online. And so as a result, the transaction fees are very, very low. For For example, these casinos that you mentioned, they're using a merchant processor called BitPay, which allows merchants to, you know, easily accept Bitcoin. And so the merchant fee is, you know, less than 1%.
Okay, so if I go to the steakhouse at one of these two casinos in Vegas now that is accepting Bitcoin, and I have my dinner and the check comes and I don't take out my wallet, I want to pay by Bitcoin, how am I going to do that?
Well, you probably take out your cell phone, your smartphone, and you probably scan the QR. They probably present to you, when the bill comes, it'll be a little QR code that embedded in that is the amount and the address to which you should send the money. You take out your phone, you scan it, up comes a page that you confirm, yes, this is the amount I'm sending, and you hit send, and that's it. You're done. And in fact, it's in a way, it's more secure than credit cards, because think about it. When you get your bill for a restaurant and you put down your credit card, the waiter takes away your credit card, takes it to the back room. You don't know what's happening to that credit card. And with credit cards, it's a pull technology. To give somebody, to give a merchant access to deduct $20 from your credit card, you have to give them access to your entire $20,000 credit line. And so we often see this, you know, in restaurants, particularly, credit card numbers being stolen. So with Bitcoin, there's none of that. It's a push technology. It's like cash. You only give, you know, over the amount that you want to send.
Well, I've been waiting for electronic transactions like that to come to my phone. And I know that Google has tried to get it going with Google Wallet, and Apple certainly with Passbook, and with other technology, they want to make it so that we just pay with our phone and do it through them. And of course, they would take a cut of that, as somebody's taking a little cut of every Bitcoin payment. So it seems like a great idea, but how does the United States federal government, which is in the business of printing and distributing money, how do they feel about Bitcoin?
So there are different regulators that have different feelings about Bitcoin. You mentioned the printing money aspect of it, so that would be the Federal Reserve. Ben Bernanke, before he stepped down as Fed chair, said that Bitcoin was very promising and very interesting. I don't think that Bitcoin really poses a threat to fiat currencies like the dollar or the euro. Now, where the federal government, I think, has some concerns is in the money laundering and terrorist financing, drug trafficking sort of realm. But even there, the Treasury Department, which regulates anti-money laundering, they're not too concerned about Bitcoin. They've put in place certain they've issued guidance to explain to Bitcoin businesses how to comply with the Bank Secrecy Act. And they seem to be pretty content with what's happening. And law enforcement seems to be getting wrapping their heads around Bitcoin and can understand how to track bad guys who are using it. So at this point, it seems to me that the response from the federal government has been one of learning, and they're cautious, but they realize it's a very innovative technology, and so they want to see where it goes.
But I've read various media outlets call it, you know, the currency of choice for seedy online activities. That seems to be putting a black mark and perhaps a black market on bitcoins.
Yeah, Bitcoin has suffered a bit of a reputational hit because it has been used on online black markets like Silk Road. But the thing to note is that Silk Road was recently taken down by the federal government. And I think what people are beginning to understand is that Bitcoin is not as anonymous as people think it is. In fact, there are other currencies that are much more anonymous. These are centralized digital currencies that are sort of custom built for money laundering.
Well, I can tell you one thing I know about Bitcoin. I remember a story a few months ago of a British guy named James Howells who had Bitcoin on his digital wallet on his hard drive and threw the computer away because it crashed on him. And the report was he lost more than $9 million in Bitcoin. Was that true?
Yeah, I'm sure it's very possibly true. That's the thing about Bitcoin. Bitcoin on your computer is like dollars in your wallet. If you're carrying around $9 million in your wallet or under your mattress and your house goes up in fire, it's gone. And nobody, the government's not going to replace that for you. Now, this is why people shouldn't have millions of dollars in Bitcoin. They should, you know. Now, so there's some people, some investors who do want to have that much money. And what they do is that they make backups. You can back up your private keys that control your Bitcoin.
Just
and
like
you
putting
can
your,
them actually in the safe.
Just like putting your bank account into the cloud. Jerry Brito, Senior Research Fellow at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University, Director of its Technology Policy Program. Thanks for joining me here today.
My pleasure.
I'm Paul Harris. This is America Weekend.